I thought I heard a sound podcast.
Yeah, so you're down in Rio right now. What are can you talk about what you're working on?
Sure. I have a gig with an artist down here named Thiago York. He's kind of a bigger sort of pop star in Brazil, really. And how touring usually works in Brazil is you just play on weekends, and they're all for flying. People don't use tour buses here or vans, just because the roads are pretty fucked up between the cities. It's such a huge country. So you fly. Yeah. So I just fly on the weekends. And then during the week, I'm free. So I'm working with a lot of other artists more locally in Rio and getting into some session stuff and smaller gigs and just developing relationships here with artists and people. Rio's a incredible, incredible city. So it's just great to be here. I live in an apartment in Copacabana. It's pretty dreamy.
Very cool. And you're not afraid of flying, I imagine.
No, I wouldn't. Yeah, I have to. It's just one of those things you have to do, at least for me to be able to perform where I'm performing. It's not like I love flying, but in this kind of gig, I mean, a lot of the annoying things about flying are like just the annoying travel things, checking in and waiting and all that. But it's pretty simple, actually, with this gig. I just get a ticket. Actually, somebody just texted it to me because I'm flying tomorrow morning. And you just show up in the airport and just basically get on the plane, get off, and get into a car. It's pretty easy.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering. I was wondering if these were like mostly like private jets and mostly like private airplanes.
Definitely not that kind of.
Oh, okay.
I mean, they're big shows, but it's not like that. But just the airport in Rio is pretty small, and you just easily, security's not as intense, and you just kind of.
Yeah.
Get in there, get on the plane, and go.
right. Pretty much just show them your passport and your boarding pass, and then you get on.
Yeah, exactly. And when I land, I usually just get right off, and then there's a car waiting, and you just kind of go. It's all very smooth.
Cool. Yeah, so how is promoting your new record with Glory the Explorer going, especially now that you're currently in Rio? Your new album, Angel Ecology, dropped on May 12th of this year. What does the promotion look like for that album?
Oh man, it's a complicated answer that I wish I could say more about. It's been a kind of confusing journey because it's, you know, I'm kind of, I guess, leading this band, But the other members are in different parts of the world and everyone's doing a lot of different things, even though I really very much believe that it's an important project for all of us. Everyone's just like dealing with their own lives and careers. So I'm kind of the one, I guess, in charge, and being down here, not having a very clear business sensibility with this stuff and the label that I'm working with on it, it was a little, things that we're still figuring each other out, what it's all, how it's all working. So I guess it's been okay. It's been kind of confusing too. That's, I guess, the best I could say. I'm still figuring it out, but I'm really hopeful that more and more people will be able to hear and enjoy the record. I'm very proud.
Yeah, it's an awesome record. I really love what you're doing with it. Did you have sort of a similar approach to Angel Ecology that you did with the debut? As I understand it, with the debut, it kind of came together before you realized that you even had an album on your hands. It was kind of just sort of...
Yeah, well, when we did the first one, I didn't know that it was called Blurry the Explorer. I didn't really know it was a band. I didn't know that I was producing it. I didn't know that I was leading it. It just... was a much more organic kind of process, which happened right at the beginning of the pandemic too. So like we recorded it like basically right before the March where everything shut down. So it was like, there was no way to know what was to happen. So that was very much at that time. And this time I kind of knew that I was kind of leading the band and producing it, organizing it. And this time I mixed the record as well. So it was a much more hands-on experience. So it was different in that sense. It was similar in the sense that we had very little developed before we went into the studio. There was some you know, abstract sketches and a couple more clear ones, defined ones, but we really let things happen in the studio, which was similar to the first one, I suppose. And then just doing a lot of post-production work and kind of finding some of the compositions and editing. I kind of really look at production and mixing kind of like a collage. So you kind of figure out, put this over here, try this there, put this color, take away this color. What's missing? I ask my friend to try something on this, and kind of just a lot of trial and error until things just seem like they're clearly working.
Wow. Yeah. I love the fact that that you consistently describe this project as kind of like a something that you're building while it's in motion. Kind of like it's like a ship that's leaving the dock and you're still putting planks on it and, you know, still trying to weld together the boiler, put the rudders in the water. But it moves, it's not like it's sinking at all. It really stays afloat, which I think is the most impressive part.
Yeah, it is just like that. And the thing is, when I work with people like Ryan DeGray and Ricardo Gomez and Leo Abrams, it's just the kind of thing where like it always does. No one's going to let this ship sink because they're such strong creative personalities that always spark another idea. So it's like when we're recording and making things together, so far there's never a moment where it's like, huh, like what do we do now? Like I don't know. I'm kind of, it's always like, oh okay, well it's just like that the whole time. Which is so fun. It's so fun.
Right. Always grabbing different things for the collage.
Yeah. Keep one thing leads to the next thing. It's always like kind of clear once you make one decision what the next thing is. But you don't know what this is going to be until you do this thing.
Yeah, right. It's kind of like a Rube Goldberg machine where you're putting the next part in just before the marble hits it.
Yeah. I mean, time's like not so linear, you know? So it's like it's kind of fun to compose in that sort of way.
Yeah, I like the fact that you don't describe yourself as the leader of the group, even though that is entirely my understanding of how this project sort of coheres together. Why is it that you are hesitant to kind of put yourself at the forefront of this project?
Interesting. Well, I don't know. I guess just because the other... I guess maybe I am. I just don't, it doesn't feel important to look at myself that way too much, especially moving forward in the next record or this thing. Like, I don't know if that's going to be my role yet. I know we think of ourselves as a band. It's just so far it happens to be me that kind of is doing most of the legwork. But even saying that feels a little uncomfortable because the other people are very significant. But I'm kind of the one that does put it all together the most.
Yeah. Okay. So that's how you end up as kind of the de facto leader then.
Yeah, I mean, I guess in a way, it's just because I have to, otherwise it wouldn't happen.
Is this the first band that you have created in this way where, you know, you end up being kind of the sun that everything kind of rotates around, but you don't really feel yourself as, you know, as part of sort of as part of, you know, the center of that universe?
Well, let's see. There's two other bands that I like. Well, one band that I kind of co-lead, which is a duo with a guitar player called Star Rover. Definitely am not a leader, and neither is Will Grafe, the guitar player. So it's very kind of clear that we just run it together. So I guess in a way that's pretty simple. And then there's a solo project of mine called The Ah, and I've made a few records under that moniker, and that's just me, basically. So I'm not really having to deal with anybody else. So that one's pretty clearly just my world, which is fun to explore. But I have to say, it's like being involved in kind of more collaborative processes, even if they're really me or just a little me, is like rewarding in a way, in a deeper kind of way, I think, too. Just bouncing things off people feels so healthy.
So Blurry is kind of an authentic organism in that respect. It is kind of like this thing that has like a certain shape, you know, a certain body, you know, maybe some will and intention behind it, but it works because all the different pieces are kind of connected within a system.
I suppose so. Yeah, the system is still being defined and still growing and developing. And this next record, which we're going to make, I think, in Rio, is still, an abstract idea that we'll see how that what manifests there. But it's all starting to come together. I just know what's happened thus far. But yeah, the personalities involved are really, really important. And then just the time to put in to develop the stuff. Because, like I said, yeah, after we were done recording, some songs are like really kind of like, okay, that's that. And then other ones are like, I don't even know what that is. And you have to really go in, like going into a cave with a shovel or something. So certain ones on this record in particular are there's one called Window Spider. It was like the weirdest experience ever trying to figure out what that song was.
Really? So what made Window Spider amorphous? Like, what about the process for that song made it unclear when it was finished?
That was one of the strangest writing processes ever for me. I think it started with, I think we did that one with a click, which we never did to any, I don't know about that actually, but there was a click and Ryan, the guitar player, had these like cues. Oh yeah, we used Leo Abrams created this drone, like kind of like a synth guitar drone. So that was just pre-recorded. And on top of that, we wanted to create like these like hits, like big hits, like different rhythms. And Ryan just cued us visually. They're going to be hits that were like slower or faster. So we just kind of improvised these like large boom, boom, dun, dun, over that. And it was in time. But that's all the song was. So I didn't know what to do. It was very like kind of abstract, just beautiful synth and these like loud hits. So yeah, I don't know. I remember I created, I don't even know how to talk about this. I play oboe and clarinet and stuff too. And I kind of created this almost classical sounding melody over it. It's like, it feels to me, it sounds like the opposite of what should happen, but somehow it was kind of working. So I went with that. And it's kind of a beautiful melody that can kind of just keep going and going and going. And I added this rhythm that was also seemed like this kind of train beat, but it, with the loud aggressive hits, didn't seem like they should go together, but they did. And then I didn't know how to connect these two different sections. And I was, this was all on my computer that I'm working on the music. And on another screen of the computer, I was watching a, I think a Jean-Luc Godard movie. And I wanted just some sound to help connect one section to the other. So I just went to the movie, put my microphone to my headphone, and just pushed play to record whatever was going on in the movie. And what happened to be going on in the movie was somebody said something in French, and then knocked on a door and then like opened. And it was like the perfect, exact perfect thing that I wanted in this song at this moment. So in this song, you hear somebody say something in French and then knock on a door. And then I wanted to add something to this next section of the song. So I sampled two different animal sounds, one like crickets kind of, so that high-pitched kind of sound, and also some birds. So you hear all of a sudden a whole other atmosphere, like insects from one part of the world, birds from another part of the world, and this like French no-wave movie that kind of knocked on the door to open into the section. Those are like the elements that I was dealing with. And it was very much like, that's what I ended up using and what ended up feeling like worked for me. But getting there, there was so much trial and error. And luckily, when those parts worked, it felt clear to me that they worked. But to get there was like quite a process. And I was living alone in the Berkshire Mountains in an old schoolhouse, completely alone, working on it. So it was very much like just a dude in his head trying to figure out what might work on this strange music. So it was a process. But it, like I said, when it worked to me, it was clear, which is always the best, because it's always kind of complicated when you're like, I think it works. Does it work? You know, which sometimes happens.
Do you ever get worried about like totally losing yourself in one of these songs and just like, you know, off track and sort of losing the thread that the song initially had and that made it, you know, initially interesting and inspiring?
I don't, but that doesn't mean that hasn't happened.
But okay. I don't worry about it. But it's not a concern of yours, but it does happen on occasion.
Of course. Yeah. Most ideas don't just work like perfectly, you know, right from the get-go. So, occasionally. But like I said, so there's a lot of trial and error. So I'm always just experimenting really and waiting for it to feel like it's working.
Are you somebody who becomes very attached to the things that they record and is always looking to salvage the things that you made, even if they don't seem like they initially worked, or if something doesn't seem like it works, are you just gonna let it go? Are you just gonna let it lie and move on?
When you say like, you mean like creatively, artistically, when something doesn't work?
In terms of art, I mean, you know, I'm not trying to dig too much into your psychology here. I'm just, you know, or asking you too much to disclose too much about your life. I just want to know about your art.
I have no secrets. If if I didn't think something worked, I wouldn't release it.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, there's no reason to put something out if I don't feel good about it. So I usually just work on something till it feels good. And that might happen like that. It might happen over working on something for years. But if I don't feel good, I'm not going to share it.
Okay. So you're not stressing out about the fact that you recorded something, it seemed like a good idea, and then didn't pan out. So then you left it alone. You let it die.
When you say didn't pan out, what is that? What do you mean by that?
You were experimenting with a certain, sound or, attempting to achieve, something in the studio, and it didn't turn out the way that you wanted it to, and it doesn't seem like it's going to be, salvageable, something that you can fix and turn into something that you're comfortable releasing. So you just put it down. You don't continue to work on it.
I mean, I don't stress about that stuff so much. Like, it's all this process. I've gone into the studio because I've produced artists as well, and like working on a track all day or something. And then at the end of the day, you're like, you know what? This doesn't fit the record, or I don't like. Let's move on from this one, or, and maybe it doesn't work. That's not something I'm stressed about. I feel like that's just part of the process of creating something with someone or alone. Just like you. Sometimes they don't pan out, and that's totally fine. That's just part of the process. You can't just like write a perfect, amazing song that sounds perfect and amazing every time. It's rare.
Yeah, you seem to have like a very, relaxed approach to, your process and to art making. And
Well, I'll only
that
say
seems
like,
to work really well for you.
yeah, I mean, relaxed feels kind of not totally accurate in that, like, there's so many hours of like really focused hard work. So it's not like I'm just like, cool, great, it's done, awesome, that was fun. Like there's a lot of like really intense focus and hours of working on it. So that's why it's not just like relaxed necessarily. That's why I don't think that's the best word for it, but I'm not like stressed and like freaking out or something.
You don't feel like if the time that you put into something doesn't produce an outcome that you're happy with, that you wasted your time. I think
Probably not.
that's what I'm getting at.
That's what I was asking. Well, thankfully, no, because that's never happened. I've never had an outcome that I'm truly happy with. I always wanted more, but that doesn't even almost deter me from continuing to try to keep doing what I'm doing.
Yeah, you never feel like you're investing too much in something, and then it just in having to let it go or in releasing it, even though it's maybe not meeting every standard that you have in your head or that or achieving every goal that you set out for it, you never feel like that wasn't worth the effort.
Thankfully, no, because if that was the case for me and most of the artists that I know, we'd all stop. To really make something great and have something great come of it is really rare. Something I strive for, but it hasn't happened yet. I've gotten some good results and positive feedback, which is really important, but not like some critical success or made any money from any of the music that any of my own music at all. It's one of the reasons for me it works as like, I mean, and I want all that for sure. Don't get me wrong. But it's one of the reasons my career works more in that like I'm a session drummer. I'm a touring drummer with different people, including like a Brazilian pop star. I produce this artist. I do this session. I make these solo records. I make this duo record. Like I do this tour in Japan that I'm gonna make like no money. I'm gonna do this tour here that makes a bunch of money. It's a big like balancing act of things that make money, things that don't make money, things that are super creative for me, things that are less creative for me. But all of it feels really important and good too to me. But that's how I think bigger picture stuff it all works. But yeah, none of the two blurry records or the solo records, none of it's like had critical success. But people have liked it. People have really given me some great feedback. It's got some cool press stuff, and it's not like I feel like bummed by the result. Well, actually, yeah, I am bummed by the result sometimes, but I'm not like put off to like I shouldn't do that again or that was a failure or something like that at all. If I'd made a record and I really felt shitty about it because of what the music sounded like, that's the kind of thing that would put me off to doing it again. But I feel really proud of the music.
What's the best piece of feedback that you've gotten so far on Blurry the Explorer?
In general, or just on this record?
I would say just in general.
I don't know. I can't remember a specific quote, but it just seems to like fit who I am as an artist, the different kinds of things it does to people, the way everyone pulls different things. It stretches people a little bit that are maybe more into one thing and the other, and other people, I don't know, just like it really, it's the full spectrum of these different things that I think I kind of can gravitate towards creatively. So, and I think that comes through. I think my aesthetic kind of comes through in it. And I think the people that know me hear that. And yeah, and people that don't know me, like you, seem to get maybe something about me from hearing all these different songs. And that feels awesome.
So when people compare the band to like Stereo Lab, that's the type of comparison that you like. Palm, I've also heard bands like that.
I love it. I never like okay. was obsessed with either of those bands, but I'm aware of them. And I was listening to stuff that was connected to them at certain moments in my life. But yeah, it's not that important that it's like people pinpoint even the same band that I necessarily was obsessed with when I was younger or whatever. I just love that things just, I don't know, pique people's interests. And yeah. And that there is this thread that connects all these blurry songs and records together, even though there's a lot of different colors and sounds.
Yeah. I find it interesting, you know, going back a little bit earlier in the conversation, that you found some inspiration in a French New Wave film to pull sound bites for, you know, this collage that you're creating as part of a blurry song. Because, you know, when I listen to your music, and without any prompting, like I am thinking of sort of the textures of Italian and French New Wave films. And I just think that's sort of an interesting connection. Are you inspired at all by film for this project? Is that something that absolutely. That pushes you?
Absolutely. Yeah. Okay. I think film is probably just as much of an inspiration as music and everything else too. Painting, movement, sounds of nature, just like there's all sorts of things that inspire me. But I really love film. I love film. And yeah, Italian and French films in the 60s, 70s are so just beautiful and strange and vivid. And yeah, I connect to them for sure. And that's why it was so cool when that connected, because I was working on the music, I'd been watching a movie, and I just like pushed play in the movie, and it was just like, it connected the movie to the music, just like in a literal as it could be.
Yeah, yeah. I feel like one of the aspects of, especially Godard, that is always compelling is just how hyper real the cinematography feels, and at the same time, just how disorienting it is. Okay. How it always feels like you're in a dream, but that dream is like solid, and you can like touch the walls and touch your face and, you know, pinch yourself and you won't wake up.
Absolutely. Yeah. I'm also really into writers like Haruki Murakami that I think kind of create worlds a bit like that in their novels.
So do you feel like you're creating kind of like a dream world for the listener to partake in with Blurry the Explorer? What kind of environment do you think you're setting for the listener with your music?
I've never thought about it that way. I mean, I definitely try to create something that feels like a world for me. As far as what the listener sees or hears in regards to a world, I don't know. I have no idea. Okay. But like, if they did, that would be great. I mean, I'd want to hear about the world. But I'm just not so specific to be like, I want them to think about this world. But a world is a great way to describe what I want to feel and hear and see when I make a production, especially even from working with another artist, like from producing something. Just like, once it feels like, oh, okay, this is a world, then I'm like, we're on to something. That's definitely a good feeling.
Yeah. Yeah. Once you feel like you've created something that people can kind of step into. Yeah,
definitely.
Yeah. Yeah. That's something that, that I really get from your music. I do feel like I am in kind of like this special space, this space, you kind of control the vertical, the horizontal, and, visuals that I can't quite, you know, put to words or even like convey to someone else. It does definitely feel like there is a there, like I'm sitting in or moving through like an environment that, you know, has some dimension to it. I guess you could say it's immersive, and that sounds like something that you're going for with your music.
Yeah, those are things that I resonate with for sure. I'm never like so specific to be like, that's what I'm gonna go for on this session, let's go. But like it typically does, things like that do happen, and I respond to those kind of things. I was just thinking when you're talking, because I make visual art, including the album cover of this record, and they're often images, I think, that seem to almost convey like a creature, or almost create like a place that you could go, but nothing's like quite like specific, but like almost. And I relate to those kind of ideas, even in like a Godard movie, like narratives that almost feel like there's a clear story, but you actually don't know what's going on. Like I love that kind of thing.
There's always room for interpretation, even if you feel like you've gotten your hand around the tail of the narrative, you find that that tail's attached to another tail, and that tail's attached to another tail. It's like I feel like the creatures on these covers definitely evoking some of the alien creatures from like a Fantastic Planet or something like that.
Oh, cool.
Again, yeah, very, very expressive, very abstract.
I love that movie. That makes sense. Cool. Yeah, that I did this last one, and the first record was created by this great artist, Clara Trevisan from Brazil, from Porto Alegre. I love her work too.
Brazilian influence in forthcoming Blurry releases, or do you think things are going to continue on the track that they've been on, this masterful collage?
I really just am like realizing that we can make this new Blurry record here. Like this is within, I've been like trying to piece that together over the last 6 months, and even in the last 2 days, realize that it's actually going to happen. So the time of thinking about, because I think we're going to do it in August, is just begun. So I'm just starting to wrap my head around like, okay, what kind of material will this be? So I don't know, but I'm in Brazil. And Ricardo, will be here, obviously, and he's from Rio. So I think it's likely that there'll be Brazilian influence. I'd be surprised if there wasn't. But if there wasn't, I also wouldn't necessarily be surprised. It could go any direction. We have a lot of influences, and once you get into a room with people that are in a certain zone in their lives or whatever, like you just have to go. You can't fight it. And if it's going a Brazilian way, great. If it's going a different way, that's okay too. You have to let it be what it's going to be.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's what's gotten you to this point, right? And that's what's, made the first two records so fantastic, is that you've just kind of let them evolve in the way that, they were meant to.
And interestingly, like as much as I love Brazilian music, what's gotten me to spend so much time in Brazil isn't that I place Brazilian music so much. Like it's that they just like the way that I play, but I don't play like a Brazilian person, So I just kind of have to keep doing me.
Yeah, I mean it's worked so far. Like I didn't know anything about you when I first heard your self-titled record with Blurry the Explorer, but it really connected with me. And I also really enjoy your current or most recent album, the one that just dropped in May, Angel Ecology. Do you feel any kinship with bands that are combining, I guess you could say, pop forms with jazz and sort of classical elements, kind of like Feifel Is Grotesque?
In New York,
I'm not sure where they're out of.
the duo.
I think it is organized around a duo, yeah.
I met. He saw me play in New York a while back. I met him. He seemed really cool, and he mentioned some. He has some influence with this guy Eduardo Mateo, who's this amazing Uruguayan songwriter that I'm like obsessed with. So we have that as our like our thing that connected those two bands. The way you just described the music sounded like something I would be interested to hear for sure. You know, like, but I might hear a band that you could describe that way and not really dig it, but I might also could. So it just kind of depends what you do with it. But those elements sound awesome. You know, I relate to those elements. I have a new record that I'm just finishing that kind of falls in that a little bit with this other drummer named Kenny Wallison and guitar player Will Grafe, but it's just about done.
Oh, cool. Is that with any of your current projects or is that a totally new one?
That is a question I'd love to answer. We're in the midst of figuring that out because it could be some connection to Star Rover, which is the duo I have with that same guitar player, but we might call it something else. And there's some ideas. I kind of can't tell, we're going to figure it out very soon. The music is 98% done. And I'm really proud of it. It's exciting, crazy music. Maybe crazy is wrong.
Yeah. I feel like crazy is not always the best way to describe things just because it has kind of a negative connotation. You know, people tend not to think of crazy things as things that they want to welcome into their life.
It's unusual music, but I think it's beautiful and old, and there's, you know, loud, harsh stuff, and there's beautiful, soft stuff. It kind of has all these different textures.
Yeah. It's very texture heavy. Yeah. I mean, I'm looking forward to hearing that. I think that that could be really cool, especially with what I know of your music. Are you familiar at all with Color Field Records?
Yes. It's so funny that you said that because, right. Yeah. I was pitching it to them. I worked at that guy's studio in LA, but everything he puts out, he records there. I've recorded at that studio a couple of times. Great, great spot.
I was just wondering, just because your background and the way that you approach your music seems very much in line with that record label.
I love that guy. Love that studio. I think the initial idea for this record was we'd do it there, but we didn't. We did it somewhere else. I hope to be back at that place soon. That's great.
Yeah. And for people who don't know, and I don't know how you could not know if you read my blog, because I write about Color Field recording artists all the time. Color Field is a record label that tries to bring session musicians kind of to the forefront and, you know, help them record albums, solo records of their own. They're always super imaginative, you know, well-produced, gorgeous records. And of course, Jeremy, I'm saying this for the benefit of my listeners. I know you know all this. Just in reading your bio and, you know, in talking with you, I'm like, God, yeah. When is Jeremy going to release a record on Color Field? This feels like a perfect match.
Yeah, I've definitely been in touch with him about it, about doing the next Star Rover record with him, with Will there. We'll see. Maybe thinking about being in LA some in the fall. I would love that. Yeah, you just have to be in a certain zone with those records because you can't go there with anything prepared. Zero. You have to just kind of go and experiment. Like, I think, yeah, basically that's the vibe with Pete.
Well, I mean, that's kind of your vibe, right?
I basically, yeah, I've done it that way. But with Blurry, I bring some things. I have sketches for sure. I think Colorful you can have sketches, I think.
Yeah, as I understand, you know, everything's supposed to be very organic and happen like on site, right? Like it's supposed to be, you know, that's part of the experiment of the label. See what can be made at the studio there.
This record I was just telling you about, I did with Kenny and Will, though, we did it that way at a studio in New York called Figure Eight, where I do a lot of stuff. And it was wonderful to go in without anything. It worked beautifully with, you know, because of these musicians, Will and Kenny are like world class. And when things are isolated, when you record, you can do all these things with them. So you can kind of create things after too that didn't seem perfect. You can kind of restructure them. And it's so fun. I love that process of editing. It's very time consuming, but it's so rewarding.
Have you ever thought about releasing a sample only project, like something that's all based on, you know, sounds that aren't necessarily yours?
Yeah. Well, actually, my solo project is basically that, especially the first two records. So the third one is more of a collaborative with a guitar player, Ryan from Blurry. But the first two are kind of that. They're all, it's all basically sampled. I'm not really playing drums at all. It's all like sampled stuff that I then like play into controllers and stuff like that. But it's and a lot of animal sound. I love sampling animal sounds. That's one of my favorite things.
What are some of your favorite animals?
To sample?
Period.
Oh, period. Oh boy. I love otters. but I love animals. I mean, you know, I'm a dog lover for sure, but birds are fascinating to listen to and see. I mean, in Brazil, it's crazy. It's crazy the birds here. There's incredible parrots flying around in Rio. It's insane. There's monkeys here. It's like I'm in a really good animal place. Giant hummingbirds. It's like, what the fuck? It's really astounding.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the monkeys, you have to worry about them stealing from you while you're out. Do you ever have to like guard your plate at a restaurant, or are they not that ambitious?
I mean, yeah, it hasn't actually been a problem. I fed them bananas. We rehearsed at the beginning of this. We just like give them, but they're the little ones, you know, but they would take the banana and, you know, just seeing it use its hands is so great. But all the Brazilians are kind of like, don't feed them. They're never going to go away. But
right. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, feeding the wildlife tends to be a no-no. Yeah, that's been my experience abroad. If you feed the monkeys in particular, locals don't like that.
You are absolutely correct, but I did it.
Yeah, I mean, why not? They're so cute, and they're so much like, you know, little people, right? Like you see so Incredible. Many human qualities in them. It's like no, these are starving children. they need nutrients.
Totally. No, it's astounding.
Cool. So has being in Brazil coaxed you into any new habits like bird watching?
Well, I'm watching birds a lot. New habits. Do I have any new habits since coming here? I don't know. I just continue to do what I do, but just here. I just like the animals here now. And I also like to bike and I run and, you know, I like to eat. I like to drink. I like to listen to music. It's just now I'm just drinking like stuff down here, eating stuff down here, like all the Brazilian food, Brazilian drink, Brazilian music, running on the beach in Copacabana instead of somewhere in New York. It's nice. It's a nice adjustment, but it's all the same basic things.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. So you feel like you're adjusting pretty well. How long are you there again? Like, I think you mentioned that to me, but
the total time of this trip is 3.5 months.
Okay, 3.5 months.
Yeah, I'm back in New York August 11th. I fly back, and I'm playing on August 12th.
Quick editor's note here. Because of some life stuff, I wasn't able to edit this episode until just now, and it was recorded back in late spring or early summer. That's why Jeremy's talking about playing shows in August. All right, end editor's note.
Wow. Extremely, extremely productive schedule. That is amazing. when do you take a vacation? Or I guess this is a vacation, right?
I can't even imagine taking a vacation. Yeah, I mean, I'm going to like I'm flying to Uruguay tomorrow, free all day. The next day is a day off, and then I'm playing. Then I'm going somewhere else to play one show. Then I come back here and I have 4 days off. It's like I don't need a vacation. I need to work harder.
Well, you have mentioned a couple of times that there's a new Blurry album on the way.
Yeah, there's a new Blurry on the way. There's other things on the way. And I have my studio set up here. So I'm getting in the group, working on new material. I mean, I always got stuff cooking and I'm working on visual art stuff down here as well. So there's things. But point is, I don't need a vacation. I'm in a good place.
Cool. Yeah. I think that's an inspiration for all of us to do something that you never feel like you need a vacation from.
I can't imagine taking a vacation. That'd be weird. But maybe someday.
maybe to some place where they don't need drummers. I don't know, like the Antarctic. I don't know. Maybe you could do a penguin study or something.
Yeah. Well, I heard somebody, I think DJ, who was his name? Somebody went there and like sampled ice melting and like recorded it with like really like incredible microphones. It's all these like almost like synthy bubbly sounds, but it's actually like the glaciers melting, and he made all this music with it, and it was pretty compelling.
Yeah, I'd love to hear that.
DJ Spooky. I think that's who it was.
All right, I have to look that up. Well, Jeremy, we've been talking for, you know, close to an hour here. Is there anything about Flurry the Explorer that you'd want people to know that we haven't covered yet?
Well, do you know, I forget what it says. I forget what's out there about Blurry the Explorer. But do you know why it's called that? I forget if this is even.
Yeah,
Okay,
I do. I do.
that's what it says.
Do you want to say it for the record?
No, I just didn't know if it was even out there. Because where it comes from is, I don't know, it feels significant to me. But beyond the formation of the band and the name of the band, I just want really people to hear the music. It's hard to want more than that, you know? It's hard to ask for more than that. Yeah, if people are willing to just listen with open ears or not, just listen and respond, that would mean the world to me. That's what music's basically made for, is for people to hear it, I think. I hope.
I mean, that's how I've been enjoying it. Maybe I've been enjoying it wrong. I don't know music at all.
It's good to just make it. Even if that was all it was, that's in a way enough. But I do want people to hear it. It would just be nice to have to know what people are hearing, listening, and responding a certain way. So I think that would be what I would want people to do, is just listen. Anything more seems like I'm pushing my luck.
Well, Jeremy, this has been really fun. Thanks for taking the time to chat with me.
Appreciate it. Just out of curiosity, so what happens? I don't even know what a blog is, really. Like, what do you do now?
Oh,